Hi there and welcome back. So hopefully you've managed to take a quick break there and absorb some of the information that Steve shared with you in that last session. He was certainly, even during the break, he was still passionate and fired up about those topics. It's like, if I find his soapbox, I'm just going to hide that out the back somewhere. No, that passion's, that's great. That's excellent. All right, so the module that we're about to get stuck into now is a module on defining the ALM process. Let's take a quick look at what we're going to talk about. So in this particular module, I want to go through the role of different ALM processes. I want to talk about implementing an Agile Scrum process, defining a Scrum Agile process for a team, and then there's that little bit about the CMMI process improvement at the end. I might get you to even jump in there a little bit, because I know you're certainly well across that, Steve.
I would love to jump in there.
I thought you would. Try and keep you out. Is that what I'm hearing?
Exactly.
Okay, so the role of different ALM processes. So if we have a look at the three, let's just do a quick overview of what those three different processes are all about. One thing I will point out, for any of these exams that you're going to do, keep in mind that the exam was written for the RTM version of the Visual Studio release. Be very clear, because remember the release cadence has changed. So with update 1 and even more recently update 2 and of course any future updates, you know, they're really delivering that constant value. It's just amazing.
Short cycle times, lots of business value, loving it.
Now, that doesn't make it overly easy for us because it means that the exam was written for, well, it's kind of almost a previous version, wouldn't you say?
I
mean, it's still got the label there of Visual Studio 2012, but now we sort of have 2012.1.2, and you certainly couldn't expect them to keep updating that exam as well, or I'm not aware of any plans.
Right.
So, again, just to reiterate that one point, it's about the RTM release for anything sort of technical. That'll probably apply more when you have a look at the testing and the admin exams, the jump starts we do at the end of the month. So what I've listed here is that with regard to the Agile process template, it was version 6.0. Now, of course, with update 2, you'll have a look there, and of course, it's now 6.2.
Right.
Okay. So this is best suited for teams that develop software in short iterative cycles, have open communication between team members, respond and adapt to change readily, they do frequent deployment of their software, and they practice Scrum, XP, FDD, or any other Agile methodology. So one of the things you should know is, for a given scenario, is there a particular process that is a better fit? It's strange that when I talk to people about creating team projects, one of the things is that it's critically important to choose the right template. But at the same time, while it's a very important decision, it's kind of not a decision. It should reflect how your team develops software, simply stated.
Yeah.
Now, choosing the wrong one is just going to introduce friction through the entire process. It's going to get people annoyed. It's going to ruin your productivity, morale. The wrong template is a really bad thing. Now, of the three out of the box, I guess it's not so bad. CMMI is very, very well confined, well defined. Where Agile and Scrum, just a little bit grayer. I mean, Scrum being the most popular form of Agile.
Right.
So that makes it just a wee bit more difficult. So if we move in and talk about that Scrum template, and let me say that Scrum 2.0 it's just a much better template. For those people that looked at Scrum 1.0 for 2010, mm-hmm. And perhaps it wasn't as complete as maybe you wanted, perhaps, you know, it wasn't as polished as the other two that were out of the box, reevaluate 2.0. Not only is 2.0 an absolute first-class template now, but it is the default template for the TFS service, and also probably for TFS out of the box as well, on-prem.
It is.
It is the default
on-prem.
One.
It's the default now. Yes, it is.
So very, very good. So 2.0, well worth a good look at. Best suited for teams that have had Scrum training, that use the Scrum terminology, that do the Scrum events, ceremonies. You know, that's really one of the things that I'd like to say there. Where they use and maintain product and sprint backlogs. That's an important differentiator, I guess, between the Agile and Scrum one. To be clear, you could do, you know, you could be a Scrum team and use the Agile template. I'm sure you have plenty of customers.
Absolutely.
That exactly fit,
yep,
into that. If you really want the really nice Scrum vernacular, if you want the laser focus on the sprint backlog itself and what we're doing in this sprint, well, that's exactly what that template's looking for. So I'd say that this is a, you know, if your team has had that training, use the vernacular, this is a good choice.
What about CMMI? Can Scrum teams use CMMI?
CMMI, the very next slide. Can Scrum teams use CMMI? That's called baiting. That's an evil, nasty thing from the man to my left. You just want me to say no. Adjudicator, can I ignore his question? Because I'm going to. I got some nods. Answer your own question.
Yes, you can. You can absolutely use Scrum with a CMMI process template. You'll have a little awkwardnesses at times, but it's important to remember that the process is distinct from the process template. You could probably use any template and still do Scrum effectively. It could sit on top of it. But aligning your process template, like you mentioned before, with what you're trying to accomplish, your process, is probably a good idea.
Excellent. I'm so glad you got that out of your system. I'm also so glad I chose not to answer that. So CMMI, Steve's going to talk more about CMMI at the end of this module, and that'll give people a lot more insight in there. It is quite important that you don't ignore it. I mean, if you've been working with TFS from the beginning, if you've been using the Agile template from the beginning, you're well across it. Yep. You know the different work item types, you know the fields, the things
Absolutely.
That you put in there. That's great, but not so much for the exam. So for the exam, you really want to make sure that you are across all three. And that's a very important thing for us to make mention of. But if we go back to the CMMI template there, best suited for teams that develop in a more traditional waterfall manner, require a strong process-driven workflow where they're geared towards larger projects broken into phases and groups and are focused on gaining CMMI Level 3 appraisal. Okay, we may let Steve talk on this a little bit later at the end of the module. It sounds like there's some dissension or disagreement.
I better jump in with just a little bit since you did cover that.
Okay, jump in.
Waterfall, and yes, if you're doing waterfall, your CMMI process template will probably be the default template of choice. But I want to stress a little bit that the default template, the CMMI template, as it is written for agile teams trying to hit CMMI. So you're going to, if you're waterfall, use CMMI. You're absolutely correct. But the creator of that template was none other than David Anderson, who then went on to create Kanban, one of the fastest, shortest cycle times, fastest delivery times, which is now used very successfully to reach CMMI levels 3, 4, and 5. CMMI doesn't demand you do waterfall. It seems to encourage it in kind of the stuff you gather, however. But I want to stress, if you use the template, don't give up on reducing cycle time, delivering quickly, shrinking your iterations, and really taking advantage of all the good ideas from Scrum, Agile, Lean, Kanban with that template as you're driving to your CMMI level 3, 4, or 5 appraisal.
Fantastic.
At you.
So for the guys at the back of the room, this is a special sign. You know, cut Steve, cut. You got it? Excellent, fantastic. I've been reaching down here, can't find his mic plug or anything like that. All right, so moving past that and the interruption, of course. So we're going to talk a fair bit about Scrum. So what the exam talks about, or the exam preparation guide talks about in this particular session, you know, there is a lot of focus on Agile and Scrum. There just is. So in this particular exam deliverable, we want to make sure that we're well across the terminology. There was, I look in the exam preparation guide and there is a lot of content there that really expect you to know those methodologies, well, I would say a lot more so than CMMI. Would you agree?
I would agree 100% because those methodologies focus on shortening the cycle time, delivering rapidly, doing all those things that you need to do in a modern application lifecycle management system.
So we're not going to turn this into a debate about which one's better. No. That's not the purpose. Our purpose here is to help equip you for this exam. And I think very, very clearly there, Agile and Scrum is far more prevalent.
Absolutely.
And then,
absolutely.
The other thing I'll add there is, you know what? It can be some really easy marks. It really can be. So when we want to talk about this, just understanding the roles, who is responsible and who can do what things and who can't, understanding the particular events, you know, we used to call them ceremonies, and what the inputs and outputs of those things are. The Scrum Guide is 16 pages. You know, that's fantastic. That's the sort of book I want. 16 pages, and then, you know, it's that goldfish mentality. It's like, nah, what's next? What's next? I love that. So as opposed to some of those other, you know, methodologies where we look at these great big books, 16 pages, that's my limit. So a Scrum team. Let's look at some definitions here. So on the slide there, Scrum teams consist of a product owner, the development team, and a Scrum Master. So you may find some slightly different terminology out there. But in essence, this is what we want. Those Scrum teams are self-organizing and cross-functional. The Scrum team chooses how to best accomplish their work rather than being directed by others outside of the team. So that's quite a significant thing. And also, I mean, it's like a game of chess. These rules are kind of immutable. If you inspect and adapt and change some of these things, well, it's not Scrum anymore. They're pretty clear cut.
Yep. And in fact, a lot of these Scrum principles are so foundational and core to Agile in general, because it is, like you mentioned, the most popular Agile methodology. When you start to deviate from some of those Scrum principles, not all, but some, you're really moving away from this continuous delivery model or this very fast cycle time. So we want to be careful if you start to deviate. And I think it's important to understand these rules.
Excellent. So to paraphrase Steve's comment there, stick with Scrum and don't deviate to Kanban. Scrum's far better.
Uh-oh.
So that's a button. Uh-oh. That's one of Steve's buttons. It's a great big button that you can push from a mile away. That's payback for the other interruption. All right. So the team model, when we have a look at Scrum, the team model in Scrum is designed to optimize flexibility, creativity, and productivity. And then again, the ideal size of a Scrum team is between 3 and 9. Now, that's just the ideal size. Below that, you start, you know, having problems. Above the 9, then again, it starts to fragment that process very noticeably. So I don't know that these are steadfast rules. 10 doesn't kick you out of the Scrum Club.
Right.
But in terms of ideals, you know, in that range is certainly the best place to aim for. So let's go through the specific roles here. I want to talk about the role of the product owner. The product owner is solely responsible for the product backlog. Now, Steve, could I ask you to, what sort of questions? Give me a couple of questions around that. So the product owner is solely responsible for the product backlog. Convince me otherwise.
Oh, I can't. They're the ones that have the responsibility, for the financial responsibility for the product as it's going out the door. Mm-hmm. They're the ones that are going to need to be able to go back and say, it needs to be, this is our first priority, we need to get this shipped in the first release, iteration, et cetera. Mm-hmm. They're the ones that should prioritize that, assign business value to that potentially.
I disagree. So the CIO comes in, he's the head honcho. He pays our wages. He comes in and says, I need you to do this. Surely you've got to do it.
Potentially. But you need to balance the value of that. And the CIO is probably going to have substantial influence on the product owner. They need to take input from everywhere. But that product owner, they should have the final say. If they're doing Scrum, they need to have they're the ones with the butt on the line to deliver the value. They better be the ones that have their ability to prioritize and deliver effectively.
So regardless of the scenario that I was to provide Steve, I should not and I cannot dissuade you from that. It's a statement of fact. The product owner needs that sole responsibility there. So again, don't fall victim to 20 cheeky exam questions that might try and convince you otherwise. I mean, these are pretty steadfast kind of rules. The product owner is accountable for, so there's a list of things here, let's just go through those. Clearly expressing product backlog items, ordering the items in the backlog to achieve goals and missions. So again, they are solely responsible for that prioritization effort. You'll learn that anyone, I mean, I love this too. I love it when anyone on the team can contribute to that backlog, but then only one person prioritizes that. That's the person that speaks with the authority of the business. That's great. They ensure the value of the work the development team performs. They are also accountable for ensuring the product backlog is visible, transparent, and clear to all. We want to ensure the development team understands items on the product backlog to the level needed. So they've got some good responsibilities there.
Absolutely.
I'll move on to the next one. So the next particular role that I want to talk about is going to be the development team. Now, be very clear, the development team, not the team of developers. Okay, there's a subtle difference there, but development team is exactly what it's referred to on in the Scrum Guide. So the development team consists of professionals who do the work of delivering a potentially releasable increment of done product at the end of each sprint. A lovely term. Development teams have the following characteristics. They're self-organizing and cross-functional. Scrum recognizes no totals. Scrum recognizes no titles for development team members other than, you know, developer, if you like, regardless of the work they're being performed. We don't care so much about those titles. Individual development team members may have specialized skills and areas of focus. Of course, that's very common, but the accountability belongs to the whole team. Development teams don't contain sub-teams. We don't fragment that way. It's a very bad thing to do. So this nice cohesive team is what we want to think about there. All right. Mm-hmm. The Scrum Master. Wow, have I found some interesting Scrum Masters out there. Firstly, and maybe my turn for a soapbox, the Scrum Master isn't a new age term for the project manager. I see it so often. You know, today they're a project manager. Oh, we've gone Scrum. So now you're called a Scrum Master. And then they try and do the same things.
Assigning people work.
I just see it so often. So, you know, if you want success, don't let it happen. Mm-hmm. Overstepping the mark?
No, not at all.
So let's have a look. The Scrum Master is responsible for ensuring Scrum is understood and enacted. Scrum Masters do this by ensuring that the Scrum team adheres to Scrum theory, practices, and rules. Okay, so they're the enforcer of the Scrum process. Okay, that's interesting. The Scrum Master is a servant leader for the Scrum team. They can coach and guide the team, but they are not a project manager. They don't turn up, we're a Scrum team. So in our daily stand-up, we're going to have the Scrum Master turn up and tell us what we're doing today. No, that's not a Scrum Master.
But you, in a daily stand-up, you do report all your status to the Scrum Master, don't you?
Absolutely right. Yeah, right. So the Scrum Master is responsible for ensuring that the meeting takes place.
Yep.
The Scrum Master often leads or coaches through there. The Scrum Master often faces the individuals and maybe just prompts to the questions.
Yep.
Okay? But that's enough. In terms of reporting their status, that should be done through other tools and things. And we're sharing that with the team. We're not showing that accountability back to the Scrum Master. He's got no power to correct us if we're wrong. Guidance, coaching, yes. That's about all I'd say there.
Thought I'd caught you there just a bit.
Ooh,
but,
yeah.
But no, you're right.
Excellent.
It's making sure that in the stand-up, these teams are held accountable to themselves. They're a self-organizing team that works together to identify. You know what? I shouldn't jump ahead because you're about to talk about teams.
Is it going to stop you? No.
No, but I stopped myself.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The Scrum Master removes impediments and facilitates Scrum events as requested or needed. Okay, so that's their main goal. I've met people that claim their role is Scrum Master. I'm a full-time Scrum Master, and I find that often very interesting in that, well, what do you do for the rest of the day? I don't think that's a full-time role, not for me.
Unless there's a lot of impediments at that company, there might just be a whole lot of impediments to be removed.
Yeah. So, final one there. Oh, sorry, I've covered teams off already. So, that's fairly straightforward. So, we had teams, we had the product owner, we had the Scrum Master.
Those are the three roles.
Very, very easy.
Very easy.
Okay. And again, don't be caught out by clever scenarios. I tried to catch Steve earlier by talking about the CIO coming in. You know, he's important, therefore he can break these rules. Maybe you can in some companies.
Not officially.
But not officially. We don't allow that at all. So just be very clear on those rules. And I think that's going to help you a lot come exam time.
I agree.
So let's talk about the Scrum events then. So what are we going to do? What are the Scrum events or, you know, ceremonies as we once called them? We want to talk about the sprint planning meeting. We want to talk about the daily Scrum, the sprint review, and the sprint retrospective. Now, again, what I love about this, 16 pages. That's all we need to do, and then you've just got to, you know, stick to them. So the first one there is our sprint planning meeting. What's the sprint planning meeting all about? So if we have a look there, the sprint planning meeting plans the work to be performed in the next sprint. It's a collaboration between all members of the Scrum team. It is time boxed, so the guidance there is if you're doing 2-week sprints, this should be about a 4-hour meeting. If you're doing 4-week sprints, this goes up to 8 hours. And of course, you know, a 3-week sprint would fall straight in the middle. The meeting has two parts. What will be delivered in the increment resulting from the sprint, and how will the work needed to be delivered, how will the work needed to deliver the increment be achieved? So if we dig into those two parts, what's going on there? So the first part there, what will be delivered in the increment resulting from the sprint? So the product owner presents the ordered product backlog. These are the things that we've got to deliver. These are the product backlog items, the user stories. Mm-hmm. Now, it's an ordered list. So that's something that the product owner is responsible for between, while the team is working to deliver the increment, the product owner is grooming that backlog, keeping it prioritized, keeping good quality detail in there for us. So the inputs of this part of the meeting, the product backlog, the latest product increment, typically what we finished on with the last sprint, the past performance of the development team. So we use our past velocity to then try and right size how much work we take off into the next sprint. And then the outputs should be a selection of items from the product backlog to go into the sprint and then the sprint goal. So I've called something out on the bottom of the slide here that I really want you to pay attention to. Only the development team can decide what goes into the sprint.
What if it has to get done? It absolutely positively must get done.
Well, then, of course it's got to go in. If they come in there and they look serious and if they're important, of course they win. No, that's facetious and wrong. Yeah. So the team is accountable for their output. So once the team has decided what they can take into that sprint, the team has made that decision, it's a form of commitment. The team saying, well, hey, I want to do this. To some extent, that's a point where we say, hey, everyone, leave us alone. We try and minimize interruptions and disruptions. We say, well, look, this is what we're going to do. We're fairly, as a team member, I'm invested. I wanted to deliver this. I wanted to have this great increment that we can, you know, potentially ship, hand out to the business when we're done here. And that's me. Now, we want to try and avoid these practices that have evolved over the years of having many masters, having people wandering into our product team area and saying, I need you to do this, and where's this up to? And, you know, this interruption. You know, the waste that Steve spoke about before, lock the door. Keep them out. That'll avoid just a lot of that waste.
They'll call on the phone.
They'll call on the phone. They'll IM you. They're creative people. So the key point there is, in terms of any scenario I could present, we want to try and, you know, our estimates have been off. We've done this. We've done this wrong. We want to try and make it better next time. So option A, the product owner spends more time deciding what goes into the sprint. No, not at all. The team chooses that.
From the prioritized list of backlog items, however.
Absolutely. So understand how they fit together. These aren't technically difficult concepts whatsoever.
Not at all.
Just don't be swayed. Don't be taken off off that key point by fancy words.
This seems to be a little bit like you're telling me that Scrum is just locking this box. What if I've worked way a bunch of overtime and I've committed to too much stuff? Can I just cancel my sprint and try something else?
An excellent question. So how about we bring that up in just a few slides?
Sounds great.
I'll talk about how we can potentially terminate a sprint and what happens to, you know, in those situations.
Good.
And to preempt that, it does happen. Fortunately, not often. But you're right, and thank you for pointing it out.
Sure.
It's not that aspect has got to be also. It's got to reflect the real world.
Absolutely.
And things don't always go perfectly, of course.
Well, I'm willing to defer my conversation until we get to that point in the slides.
Excellent. All right. The second part of this meeting then. So in the second part of the meeting, it's again half that sprint planning meeting time box. How will the work needed to deliver the increment be achieved? So in this time, the development team decides how it will build the functionality into a done increment. We're going to talk about done a little later on. The sprint backlog is the selection of items off the product backlog, plus a plan on how we're going to deliver them. You know, the team's talking to each other here. We're figuring out a strategy and a plan. often the product owner attends that part of the meeting. You know, the product owner can provide some great clarity on some of those points. The product owner can also help in maybe some trade-offs there that the team needs to make. So there can be some great value. Again, not the product owner trying to, you know, influence, you know, the team's commitment, but that level of clarity can help us a lot. By the end of the sprint planning meeting, the development team should be able to explain how it intends to work as a self-organizing team to accomplish the sprint goal and create the anticipated increment. There we have it, the sprint planning meeting.
Yep.
The next event that I want to talk about is the daily scrum. You know, our stand-up meeting. It's a daily 15-minute time-boxed meeting. You know, some of my teams can get it done in 10 minutes, fantastic, but we really don't want to exceed those time boxes. That's one of the key things there. So, you know, 10 to 15 minutes, not really a big problem. Now, it's a meeting for the development team, often held, you know, in the mornings, and it's used to synchronize activities and create a plan for the next 24 hours. During that meeting, the team, you know, each team member then explains what's been accomplished since the last meeting, what will be done before the next meeting, and what obstacles are in my way. And that's pretty much it. It's not then a technical debate, and you've got to be very careful. And this is something that the Scrum Master probably should do for us. You know, it's not a technical debate when I say, well, look, this is what I've done, this is what I'm about to do, and then someone wants to voice disagreement. Someone wants to say, well, no, you shouldn't use MVC, this is what we want to use. We absolutely can't have these meetings fall down into those sorts of conversations. Take it offline straight after the meeting. Absolutely.
That's the beautiful thing about the meeting is I get a group of notes and I say, MVC, I really want to use it, but we ran into this problem, for instance, or we need to make sure that you use this template that we've already decided. Mm-hmm. But I don't bring it up during the meeting. But immediately after, I'll pull that person aside and communicate with them. I've learned that status from other people. I've learned what the team is working on so that I can contribute where necessary to deliver faster, shrink the shrink the time scale, higher quality, whatever that bar is.
And I think this is just absolutely invaluable, not just in software development teams. I witnessed this back in Australia a couple of months ago. We got this some customer paid me with this funny paper thing. It's a check. We don't use checks very much in Australia. It's like, what am I going to do with this? This is horrible. So I had to actually go to the bank. Inconvenient. Waste. I guess I was getting paid. I should be more grateful. Thank you to my customers. So I get down to the bank. The bank's not open yet. More waste.
Yes.
I'm forming a queue. And what I witnessed was extraordinary. I watched every member of that bank come together, that branch, come together into a little huddle. They talked for 6 to 8 minutes. I witnessed them doing a stand-up, and I thought, this is amazing. They just pinged each other. You know, maybe the branch manager was there to provide some feedback, saying, well, look, our branch is going well, or we're a little low on lending at the moment, so as a team, let's go and do this, and someone offers a bit of advice and contribution. And I thought, wow, this is great. Nothing to do with software development, but it just underlined the value of just getting the team talking and communicating. Oh. Quick huddle, off they go.
Amen.
I thought it was great.
That's a powerful, it's a powerful story.
And then I walked in and said, what do I do with this now? Fortunately, I knew what to do. So I think the rules there are fairly straightforward. It's simply just that synchronization. What have we done? What are we going to do next? And do I have any impediments or challenges there? Yep. Lovely meeting. The sprint review meeting then. So the sprint review meeting is, one of these critically important ones, time boxed. So if it's a 2-week sprint that we're working on, this should be a 2-hour meeting. If it's a 4-week sprint, then it should be a 4-hour meeting. So, time boxing is very important for Scrum. So let's have a look at what happens in that meeting. The sprint review meeting is held at the end of the sprint to inspect the increment, what we've done, and adapt the product backlog if needed. The meeting should include the following elements. The product owner identified what has been done and what has not been done. The development team demonstrates the work that has been done and answers questions about the next increment. Asks questions. They don't answer them. They ask questions about the next increment. Now remember, we can only show work that is done by our definition of done. That'll come up in a moment.
What about PowerPoints? I can show you what I'm going to do, can I?
No,
well,
you
this
cannot.
This is what we were going to get accomplished. We didn't make it, but this is what we were going to do.
Maybe in Steve's sprint review meetings. Maybe in Steve's sprint review meetings, that's acceptable.
No, never. That's an important one. That's what's been. It's running code, right? Mm-hmm. It's what people have delivered. I think that's a really interesting thing that's powerful about that mm-hmm. particular meeting is there's no hand waviness. You either did it or you didn't.
I'm going to use an analogy a little later about, you know, having our own house built. One of the biggest investments as individuals probably any of us will make.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're pouring in a lot of money into this house that we've worked with an architect to design, and they're off building it for us now. I want to drive past there. I want to actually see the frame go up. I want to see them lay the concrete down there. I want to see the progress. I don't want, you know, the site foreman to come around just telling me and going, oh, we'll see this part of the blueprint, you know, crayon. We're kind of finished over here a little bit, and we should be get this done by next week. That doesn't have anything like the same bearing or value to me as me driving past the plot of land and seeing it.
Well, and it lets you be disconnected.
Yes.
And if you are emotionally disconnected from the product that you're the product owner of, mm-hmm. or a user that's going to be using it, you've already lost half the battle with mm-hmm. that engagement, and you don't want to lose that. And seeing it in person, really getting a feel for that, I love that.
You can't ship promises.
No.
You know, this is what it is.
Yeah.
So very important there. So as a result of the meeting, the result of the meeting is a revised product backlog that defines the probable backlog items that we're going to put into the next sprint as well. So we're showing what is done by our definition of done. We're then having some conversations there. And it also helps us bring these, to discuss what is most likely going to be moved into the next iteration, the next increment that we're going to plan to deliver. We also have a sprint retrospective. In fact, I think Steve and I have a retrospective tomorrow to see how we did today.
Yes, we do.
I've already started taking notes. Steve talks too much. The purpose of this particular meeting, let's have a look. Inspect how the last sprint went with regards to people, relationships, process and tools. Identify and order the major items that went well and potential improvements. Create a plan for implementing those improvements to the way the Scrum team does its work. We want to be an evolving team, self-evolving, getting better and better and better.
I am so glad you put relationships in there too, because that's one mm-hmm. of the key things in that retrospective is really engaging mm-hmm. as a team. I think if I've been in 4 or 5 retrospectives with a team and somebody hasn't burst into tears in appreciation for someone else, I mean, really, that level of emotional commitment, mm-hmm. I think I'm not leading that retrospective as well as it should be, because that retrospective is meant to mm-hmm. to really get the concrete improvements as, you know, that you find we need to do unit testing, we need to do this, those types of improvements. But it's at this emotional, this powerful, mm-hmm. visceral team level that yeah. really you can see some incredible improvements. It feels soft and fuzzy, but the results are not. This is that truly self-organizing, cross-functional team. Not group, but mm-hmm. team.
And as a team member as well, I mean, it's great to think that I'm coming into the office, I'm doing my work, and, you know, we are looking at ways to improve, we are measuring these things, we're taking it on board. I mean, the self-improvement is a great aspect of that job. I mean, personally, I could not be involved in a job or a team where I wasn't improving. I don't know, I wouldn't enjoy that anywhere near as much.
No.
I find the idea of doing those retrospectives, and as someone that delivers a lot of training for TFS, helping a lot of teams, it's funny. I mean, I'm sure many of you have all gone and attended courses, you've attended conferences, user group meetings, and you've been asked to fill in those evaluation forms. You know, as a trainer, they're gold for me. I want to know what I've done well so I can keep improving. And I just take those things and I take the good with the bad. And often it's the bad that shows me what we can be doing yeah. better. So, you know, the team, applying that to the team, it's just gold. It really is. All right. The Scrum team may adapt the definition of done. I probably should have talked about definition of done sooner because I've alluded to it a few times now. They may adapt that definition as appropriate to increase quality. So when we talk about definition of done, and I'm trying to remember how quickly that slide comes up because I could do with it about now, we can evolve that. we can say, well, look, it's time to, you know, gradually improve or increase some of those quality bars. As far as our definition of done goes, maybe we set a goal for 50% code coverage just to get us started. And we've been hitting it once or twice, we're feeling pretty confident, let's turn the dial. Let's say our definition of done now includes 60% code coverage. Just to choose just one particular metric, look at a metric. You know, start with realistic goals and then start to just push those goals up a bit. You know, aim for that improvement.
Might I ever choke them down to make an improvement?
Excellent idea. So if we're not hitting those goals and those sorts of things, if we're sort of, you know, if we're trying too hard in one particular area, that could easily be at the detriment of others. And, you know, that uneven weighting could be a problem. It could be to improve, we need to ratchet this down a little bit to invest in the other areas to bring them up in parity. Is that the kind of thing you were thinking about?
That's exactly it. I love that answer.
So it's not always about, you know, raising the bar, and I'm really glad you pointed that out. So easy it is, it is very easy to think of it in terms of just more, increase. It's balance. I like that. Thank you.
Sure.
All right.
Good answer.
And I didn't talk. Thank you, mate.
Absolutely.
All right. So in terms of the time box for that particular meeting, I can't recall if we spoke about it. For a four-week sprint or iteration, we usually aim for around 3 hours there. Down to a two-week iteration is generally around the 90-minute mark. Okay, just as a guide. So in the next section, what I want to talk about is, you know, to define a Scrum Agile process for a team. So hopefully in that last one, we've got the terms, we've got the events, you know, pretty down pat. There's some, as I said earlier in this particular module, I think there's some easy marks there.
I think so too.
So this is just great for those people specifically looking for that exam. Get that stuff out of the Scrum guide, read it, and don't be enticed into, you know, answering other than what you've seen there.
Well, one of the nice things is the Scrum guide is the canonical answer for Scrum. You can lay out the Scrum guide, read it, understand it, and written by the founders and creators of Scrum, right? Yes. And so I believe you even have a link later on in the presentation, or you'll point people to where they can download it. But when you're out there and you're reading it, you're reading, you know, from the horse's mouth, if you would. And so that's one of the ways that it's easy to write questions against that. It's easy to understand it. Whereas some of the other, if you just say Agile in general, there's a million different interpretations. So it can sometimes be difficult. So that is it's a good place to come down to and understand.
And it's just, it's very convenient and easy to study it. It's
16
a great
pages.
Studyable topic.
Yeah.
All right. So the next topic I want to talk about there is cancelling a sprint or iteration. So as an overview, let's have a look at it. Only the product owner has the authority to cancel a sprint, although he or she may do so under influence from the stakeholders, the development team, or the Scrum Master. But that sole decision is vested in that product owner. Now, a sprint would be cancelled if the sprint goal becomes obsolete or if it no longer makes sense given the circumstances. You know, this isn't lemmings just, you know, walking off the cliff here. What we want is, you know, sometimes things change. Things become obsolete. You know, we planned and focused on a certain thing and, you know, someone moved the cheese. So that isn't a reason for us just to keep marching the death march and off we go. Not at all. It's as soon as we can realize that, the opportunity to terminate the sprint, to do a reset, to refocus and get back on track. Now, interestingly, this doesn't happen that often, okay? But as an eventuality, well, it can, and you should not be adverse to it. Is it a failing of the team to terminate a sprint? What do you think?
I don't think so, no.
Let me help
and
you
I think, and I think
Is it a failing of the team, Steve?
I'm going to say no.
Oh, good answer. Excellent. Do you like that coaching?
Yeah, I appreciate that.
You're welcome. Absolutely not. So, and this is one of the emotional things that I find that can impede a team here. If the things have changed, the team is committed, they want to do it, they want to, you know, they've got this great mindset about quality, about delivery and those sorts of things. If you know, they really don't want to terminate it because they see it as a form of failure. And I want the team to really get over that. It's not at all. If the value is not there anymore, if something unexpected has happened or it has changed, the stop, reset, start again. Often, the sooner you realize that, the less impact, the less negative impact that's going to have. Halfway through, if we're building a house and I'm seeing that it appears that I'm getting two garage doors instead of one, the sooner we take corrective action there, the cheaper it's going to be in terms of time, the reset and so forth. So, guys, that looks wrong. As soon as I see them just marking it out, and then we have the conversation, the discussion, they say, well, we'll sort of cut these timbers to measure, we're doing it this way. The sooner that we say, well, no, stop, down the tools, let's do a reset there and restart that, knowing that there's only going to be, you know, one door now.
Absolutely. I couldn't agree more. And one of the things I think that is critical is if you ship that product that's not used, you now have to maintain it forever, right? Yeah. It's not like you're just delivering something and then, I don't have to worry about that. Wasted 2 weeks of effort in our sprint. You now have to maintain it forever.
Yeah.
It's a good point. Cut, it's not a problem.
And just get over the emotional side of it. It's often the best thing.
So what are the reasons that I can cancel a sprint, though? You mentioned we're building the wrong thing. Is that the only reason I cancel a sprint?
No, not at all. Not at all.
Tell me more.
So it could be suddenly that let's say a new law is enacted. Something happens, a budget's brought down. Suddenly there's another requirement there that's just made that thing we're doing instantly obsolete. We didn't anticipate that. So let's stop what we're doing right now. Now, when you do this, it's really just a chance for us to look at the work that is done. Maybe we will take that work still, look at what's not done, and maybe we push that onto the backlog for reprioritization. You know, maybe the work no longer is truly obsolete, or maybe something just earth-shattering has turned up. We need to down tools and get over here quickly. So terminate, you know, take any value we can from it, maybe push them onto the backlog, and maybe they just drop down because something so much more important has just jumped in the way. There can be plenty of reasons. Have you had any yourself?
I haven't had a sprint cancellation, but I have had ones where it's felt close because there was something really important, but we just didn't want to sacrifice the sunk cost because we knew it was a valuable feature set that we were delivering. So we just waited out those extra 3 days, get it delivered, and then moved on to the new feature. We could delay.
Okay.
We couldn't have waited those 3 days. I could have seen canceling it.
So the sunk cost there, just I want to have a look at this next slide.
Sure.
So the process, when a sprint is canceled, any completed and done product backlog items are reviewed. Now, if part of that work is potentially releasable, if part of that work still meets our definition of done, well, the product owner is probably going to accept it. Again, to be clear, it's just one of those it depends type answers. All incomplete product backlog items are re-estimated and put back on the backlog. Now, that could mean we have to frequently re-estimate them. That partially done stuff sitting on the backlog starts to lose value the further on we go from it.
You're saying inventory is expensive?
Oh, I wouldn't have used those terms.
Large queues are bad things? Requirements change?
I'm picking up a theme here. All right. Finally, the definition of done. Let's get into the definition of done. When the product backlog item or an increment is described as done, everyone must understand what done means. It's so much an overused term or word. Okay? My son comes in and he says, I've just finished mowing the lawn. Oh, so it's done. You know, what that means is potentially he's grabbed the lawnmower, he's run around at once. The lawnmower is probably still sitting in the yard somewhere. The side gates are probably wide open. I can bet she hasn't got the weed whacker out and done that. His definition of done is what is the least effort I could possibly do to keep the old man happy.
So a definition of done might be a negotiation here between the old man and the doer.
If negotiation equals argument, yes. Which it shouldn't. My definition of done is the lawn looks great. The weeds are all under control. Everything's put away. The hoses are coiled and put back under the tap. I can walk the yard and feel proud of the work that I've done.
Well, you're a tough product owner.
Trying to get him to see that. Anyway, let's not get into that conversation. Although I feel rather confident that he probably isn't watching. So a definition of done there. What does done mean? It means different things to different people. It's important that we are all on the same page. I don't want a developer going and just writing out a little thing saying done. Well, done should mean done. That means we can push it out. I can deploy that tomorrow. Customer's going to be happy.
Yep.
You know, but he didn't do any unit tests. It hasn't been documented. Testers haven't looked at it. It hasn't gone through any release processes for us. Hang on a minute. This isn't done at all. One small part of this may have been partially completed.
Yep.
So as a team, let's come up with our definition of done. It can be so much bigger than people usually think. So it's interesting, in a lot of these courses, team, come up with your definition of done. What do they normally do, do you think? Are they normally light on?
Tested.
Well, do you think they normally have too few or too many in their definition of done?
I don't know.
Interesting. So what I find is the team wants to excel. So typically they come up with, you know, done really means this and this and this and this and this and this. And soon they've got 30 post-it notes. And they're saying done means all of these things. And it's been performance reviewed and security reviewed, code reviewed by 19 people, including Mr. Petzold. Absolutely. This is a great done definition. Anything that meets this definition is gold. And then I say, well, great, that's your definition that I will hold you to for the rest of the course. You wouldn't believe it. What happens next?
Post-it notes
disappear. You come in the next day and it's like, what happened to half those? It must have been the cleaners. So people want to go in there and, you know, to be realistic, you've got to come up with a definition of done that everyone understands and agrees with. So you might start with fewer things. And remember we talked about the retrospective. So in the retrospective, we might gradually add extra things to our definition of done as we mature. We might evolve some of them. You know, we talked about increasing things like some code coverage in there, increase the unit tests that we have over time. At the start, it'd be great if we had 100% code coverage. Let's ignore the fact, of course, that's largely impossible for many reasons. But it's nice to go in there with such grandiose ideas, but to start delivering, we might be able to get away with 40%.
Right.
And let's hit that goal. Let's hit that goal and let's refine that definition of done.
I want to jump in with that. Please. Definition of done, and one additional thought on that, which is that definition of done is sometimes where the team can put quality bars against this overwhelming belief when you first adopt Scrum that people go, oh, all we're going to be working on is business valued features. Push, push, push. When will we refactor? When will we do? And the definition of done is a chance for the team to say, here's the quality bars that we need to meet so that we can continue delivering business value rapidly and effectively. So we're not going to be overwhelmed by failure demand coming back from bug rework. So it's a chance for the team to also not put a barrier up, but to put up some common sense quality bars that say, this is what we mean by done, and we're not going to release just craziness just for the sake of getting something out the door.
Agreed 100%.
Yep.
So to state that, or to summarize that a little bit more, so things are done when items in the increment meet the team's definition of done. Okay? And again, that's very, very clear. The team's agreed definition of done, which can be evolved over time. All right. I want to move on to determining our sprint and iteration length. So typically, your iterations for Scrum are usually 2, 3, or 4 weeks. So how do we choose? So as a general rule of thumb, what I like to talk about here is that, you know, if we are getting a great quality backlog, if the acceptance criteria are all there, if the user stories are great, if we're not in an overly dynamic situation, then I'm happy to go out the full 4 weeks. You know, we can really go 4 weeks knowing that there's just not a lot of change likely to happen within that time. I mean, it doesn't preclude it, but just statistically there'll be less. If I've got, you know, if our team is really still quite new, if the product owner, you know, if they're out there talking to the business, you know, if they're still coming to grips with the role. Let's say that the items on the backlog just aren't as complete as they should be. Is that diplomatic?
Yeah.
If the acceptance criteria are absent or potentially not as thorough as they should be, if there's, you know, if there's more risk, if the team's expected to have to make more assumptions there, then I like to shrink those iterations. I like nice two-week ones because it gives us that faster feedback cycle to say, well, look, what do we do here? And if we missed, then, you know, it's only 2 weeks before we get back on track.
I'm glad you pulled it back to two. Because from my point of view, as we move to longer ones, as I've coached teams in Scrum, I seem to, and maybe this is me, maybe it's the teams I've worked with, but the first three sprints seem to be painful. Mm-hmm. We miss our sprint goals. Things aren't quite right. And for some reason, it's always three or four sprints that go poorly, regardless of sprint length. So if I give 2 week sprints, I've only blown 6 weeks before I'm hitting it on all cylinders. Whereas if I have a 1 month sprint, it's 3 months, twice as long, before I really get the cadence. Because I don't know, I think it's just that I've had the chance to retrospect. Mm-hmm. So when you were saying that weaker team, think about a shorter sprint. That's counterintuitive to a lot of people's thought process. They think, oh, we're coming from waterfall. Let's do a, you know, 8 week sprint. Mm-hmm. Well, it doesn't break those bad habits, and you don't learn the process as quickly. So if you think a four week sprint is too short, go to 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. You know, cut it in half, feel that pain, learn it, and then potentially when you're a high functioning Scrum team, move to 4 weeks. Mm-hmm. I never see that happen. I always see them going to one, but but you could at that point do any length sprint you wanted.
And just for the record, for the teams that I usually coach, it's usually only the first sprint that goes challenging.
Yeah, it must be the expertise.
Must be the coaching.
It's the coaching right there.
And if you believe that, I could sell you, you know, anything. All right. So what about the backlog items that are not complete in a sprint? Because, you know, that happens. We try as a team to look at our velocity. We try and figure out exactly you know, how much we can do in the upcoming increment, the upcoming iteration and sprint. And sometimes we don't get that spot on. So what about incomplete items? So let's have a look at the strategy here. The development team should always try to select appropriate items from the product backlog that can be completed within a sprint. Now, that doesn't mean they just take the top X number. Sometimes they might take items 1, 2, and 3 from a prioritized list. 4's a bit big, and we're not going to fit that in, so we might just pick up 5. Okay, and that's a nice right size for our sprint duration and our velocity. Incomplete work cannot be presented during the sprint review meeting. We've already spoken about that. We can't claim any credit whatsoever for work that didn't meet our definition of done. Unstarted work can actually be, you know, fairly easily returned back to the product backlog. So if we just simply didn't even get to number 5, then we push it back to the backlog. It is then reprioritized, and potentially it may still be at the top. So we pick it up for the next sprint. But it is an opportunity for them to reprioritize the backlog, and maybe during that time, 5 suddenly just fell down to 8, 9, or 10, and maybe it's now the horizon's at least another sprint away for it. Who knows? One of the challenges there is frequently carrying incomplete work to the next sprint can make measuring your velocity really, really hard. Only recently I've come across a team where this for them was normal. So they'd constantly be carrying over unfinished work. And I'm looking at their velocity and, oh my God, it's like a seismic graph. You know, when all sorts of interesting things are happening. And we're in sprint 8, and they've still got incomplete work from sprint 2 that is just carried forward. So their velocity went through these ridiculous, you know, extremes. And the big problem there was they didn't really have this sense of needing to get it done. It was okay not to get something finished. We'll just put it into the next, just push it into the next, push it into the next. You know, a terrible idea.
So are you saying that if you're looking at not being able to complete a sprint, everyone should work overtime? Work some crazy hours, death march?
So no, absolutely not. So in terms of right-sizing it, what we really look for there is the team should work at a sustainable pace. That's it. We want to keep the team at a sustainable pace, just busy. We don't want people cancelling their weekend plans, taking time away from the family, starting to resent the job. You know, that's not a team. That's going to start eroding the team really, really quickly. Yep. So that team and the velocity we want is to keep the team, you know, gainfully busy doing work, adding value to the process. And really, I don't think you could ask for more than that.
No. And in fact, if you're carrying work, by all means, don't commit to so much next time. So you can get that stuff done.
Absolutely, close it out. If our velocity is 120 and we're not, you know, we're supposedly carrying some stuff forward, take 100. Yeah. You know, not a problem at all. Let's just right size that again. All right. So monitoring our sprint iteration progress. Let's talk about that. So at any point in time, in a sprint, the total work remaining in the sprint backlog items can be summed. The development team tracks this total work remaining at least for every daily scrum. So in the scrum, we want to sort of keep track of where we're up to. We want to use things like our burndown charts to get a good idea of are we on track. The development team tracks these sums daily and projects the likelihood of achieving the sprint goal. By tracking the remaining work throughout the sprint, the development team can manage its progress. So, you know, that burn down, again, it's just excellent. That should be up on the wall for all the team to see. We can sort of see the work as we're getting through that work. We can see that, you know, if this line's a little below that line, we're looking good. If it goes the other way, we're potentially now falling behind the line. Mm-hmm. And the interesting thing that I've witnessed in teams is that when that happens, if the team, all team members that are accountable for this, if they see on that burn down that we've just fallen a little bit behind, what behavior do you think that drives, Steve?
I'll turn it back to you.
Yeah, sure. So if we see that the team are looking and realizing they're a little bit behind, you start to see in the team that maybe someone, you know, does take that little bit less lunchtime. They don't begrudge it. Maybe they talk about things. Maybe the coffee breaks are a little bit less. I just see that if the team sees that they're a little bit behind, the team seems to self-correct that. That's experience talking.
That I agree completely. It's the not demanded time, mm-hmm. but the volunteered time.
Yeah.
And when people get passionate on a scrum mm-hmm. team, and I see a lot more passion on teams than I do on groups of developers kind of working together mm-hmm. on a project, that team really changes that behavior and lets people feel good about saying, oh, hey, let's blow through lunch and pair.
Yeah.
Let's just get this done. Hey, Scrum Master, can you get us some pizza? Because we're just going to work through lunch today. I mean, what a great idea. You know, I mean,
that really works.
Volunteers, absolutely.
Yeah. All right. So there's a demo there with TFS using Scrum Artifacts. You know what? We're going to do some demos coming up, you know, through the rest of the session. So I might defer that demonstration just in the interest of time because I think we need to top up the coffee. What do you reckon?
I agree as well. There were a few questions that we probably want to like look at mm-hmm. and talk about. There's this idea that developers aren't always on a Scrum team as developer staff, but they're filling multiple roles. Mm-hmm. Thoughts on developers filling in as a Scrum Master or product owner?
Interesting.
Thoughts?
Wow, what a question.
Yeah, it's a tough one. That's an awesome designer.
All right, so my opinion on that is that in terms of the role of Scrum Master, I actually like the idea of having that as a rotating role within the team. I like the idea of, you know, to try and avoid the one person maybe not doing it well, to give everyone an opportunity to learn there, and to also go on point that it's not the traditional project manager that's the Scrum Master. It's someone just enacting the rules of Scrum and doing the things that were listed on the slide earlier. So having a rotating Scrum Master across the team, I see working very, very well. Again, that's some of the self-improvement.
Sure.
So each person looks at the impediments, learns ways to work through those impediments. And they kind of don't build the power base by moving that role around. So I think that's probably a good idea.
What about product owner?
So product owner I've got a much bigger issue with.
Okay.
So what makes a good product owner? For people that aren't familiar with that role, think of it as I know some people that will shoot me for saying this. You know, they're like a BA. You know, they've got the skill to go out there. They will elicit those requirements. They'll hear what were often just not well expressed things. Oh, and I want to be able to pay with PayPal. Turning that into some really, you know, high value backlog items, into some user stories, asking the right questions, getting the acceptance criteria right. That's a skill, that's a talent. Building a rapport with the stakeholders, earning their respect, being able to go and talk to them, maybe not as peers always, of course, but getting that and converting that into something as an input for the team, that's not something that an average team member simply steps into and does well. Right. I'd be a lot more nervous about that sort of suggestion or proposal.
I would tend to agree on the product owner and the Scrum Master on, on both of those. I want to go back to, if you could pull up your slide, your last slide that you had there, if you could, that one right there, and if we could jump over to your screen, because I want to call out the last bullet. Scrum does not consider the time spent working on sprint backlog items. It's only the work remaining. I want to stress that when you're talking about agile development, some agile methodologies will capture your original estimate and your actual work completed.
Yes.
Scrum does it for some very specific reasons. They call it out as not to track that. But some people will still be agile and will capture that data. One reason is a very fast feedback cycle on, oh man, did I come anywhere near my original estimate? You know, I estimated this was going to take 8 hours, and every time I do that, it takes 16, and I don't know why. That type of fast feedback would let me get better at estimation. So some agile methodologies will track actuals as well as completed work. Scrum does not. I think it's important to maintain that distinction.
Excellent.
I had another question here on requirements gathering. Isn't that really critical up front to get that absolutely right the first time? Otherwise, the costs can be gigantic at the end. And Peter, that's a fantastic question. We're going to be talking about requirements coming up in just a bit. So I want to defer that question, if that's all right. And we'll get to it when we talk about eliciting requirements in the next section.
So should we take a 10-minute break?
Yes, indeed.
Fantastic. We'll see you shortly.
See you shortly.